Our speaker today is Alex Alviar, who is a member of the First UU Church of Los Angeles, but comes to us most immediately from Montana. He has led a life of rich and interesting experiences, which have included studying in a Buddhist seminary, living in a struggling hippie intentional community. There's a story there. We won't hear it now, but there's a story there, I'm sure. A brief conversion to a biblical church that brewed its own beer, marriage, birth of two sons, and the blow-up of his marriage. In his professional life, he was a poet in residence and a professor on the Flathead Indian Reservation in Montana for over 20 years. Today, he is an instructional designer for USC and, for better or worse, is spending the year living in a van traveling the American West. His ancestry is Filipino, and today he is going to share reflections on being a brown man living in white spaces and the journey to being at ease in one's own skin. I present Alex. Thank you.
Thank you, Tim. I'm Alex, and I use he, him pronouns. So, this month is about belonging. So where is home for all of you? That's my favorite question to ask whenever I'm getting to know somebody. It's a lot different than asking where you're from. When I ask someone where they're from, I get physical locations. Yeah. So I get, you know, I'm from Australia. I'm from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. I'm from Detroit. But when I ask, okay, so where's home? I get a very different response. I get things like, well, I was an army brat, so I moved all over the place. But you know where home is? North Carolina, where I went to college. And that's where all my good friends still live. And so I always want to get back to there. Or maybe for some of you, home is wherever my kids are. When I'm with them, that's home. A lot of people say this where I'm from in Montana. I know I'm home when I go up Ravalli Pass and I see the sun break over the Mission Mountains. It is so beautiful. I know I'm home. So for me, I knew I was home the first time I dropped three stones into the Joys and Sorrows Bowl at First U LA. Ours is water, not sand, so it just ripples out everywhere. I dropped my stones in, and I sat down, and I cried. Maybe it was because I was newly separated and divorced, 1,000 miles away from my kids, and alone in an enormously strange city. I didn't understand why I cried. I just knew right then that I didn't care how weird and strange these people were, how good or bad the sermons were going to be, how strange and churchy all of this was. None of that mattered. I just knew I need to come back and drop those stones in. And I want to start my week every week while I'm here with that. That felt so incredibly important, especially at that time, coming to a new city and starting a whole new life. Something in me yearned to keep coming back to that bowl and dropping in those stones. So I still didn't care about the people and how weird they were. They actually did become like family and friends. They have become my home away from home. And I knew this because I remember coming back from a month spent with my kids in Montana and landing at LAX. And, you know, everybody does this as soon as you're on the tarmac and you can turn your phone on, you flip it open, and, oh, text messages. And for me to see as I was on the tarmac, oh, there's a bunch of us getting together for Covenant Group tonight at Kayola's house. Kayola was our director at the time. And I'd been traveling and up since 4 a.m. Instead of going home to the room I was renting in some house in L.A., I jumped in my car and I drove straight to Kayola's house. Because I didn't want to sit home and just, sure, I was tired, but I didn't want to get home and just sit in an empty room and get some sleep. I would rather be exhausted and with my friends. I did not want to be in a lonely room missing my kids. I wanted to be around my friends' love and warmth and light. So again, huh? Yeah, this is home. I just left my kids, but I'm glad this home here in LA and these people are here for me. So, just like our story about Sprout, you know, leaves, goes to all these places, and then eventually comes back and realizes how great it is. You know, that is a story, and maybe a lot of you have your own versions of this. That is a story as old as Odysseus himself, trying so hard to get back to his beloved Ithaca. That is a story where home, it's not just a physical space. Home is an emotional space. It's a place, it's a psychic space, and a place that we constantly yearn to get back to. So, if I asked you now, where's home? Where are the places? Maybe there's more than one. Where are the places in your life you yearn to get back to? Where do you feel most loved, most respected, most honored? Where is there a table that it's not about what you bring to the table, it's simply about who you are when you show up. And at that table, you feel like they cannot wait to have you come and sit down and eat. No performance, no fitting in, no trying to earn your spot. The table where you simply belong. Where's that table? And it's okay if you feel like you're not sure. But a life of a crowded table, I can tell you, it's a good one. Wherever you can find them. And by the way, you can be like me and have lots of different homes, lots of places you yearn to come back to. Maybe like you, you've got a few of them yourself. Some of you have been calling this place home for decades. Some of us, maybe a lot of us, look around at our home and it has changed so, so much, so drastically. Really hard to even recognize it anymore. Maybe your home has been more of a spiritual wandering. I know this about a lot of Unitarians. Maybe you have jumped or wandered from one tradition, one church, one spiritual practice to another, all in search of answers to some of those deepest, oldest, ancient questions. How should one live? What does a good life look like? Who am I? And how should I be in the world? And maybe that has brought you all different kinds of homes. But for now, we're glad you're here, because this is a good spot. So I'm going to tell you a little bit about my own home, Missoula, Montana. It's a little blue dot. Always has been this long history of a liberal progressive town in a very red state. Sometimes it's gone blue, sometimes it's gone purple-ish. It's not that right now, I'll tell you that much. But this past Thursday night, I drove behind my 19-year-old son, following him home from the hockey rink after his game. He's a teenager, and he forgot to turn his headlights on for a block or two until, you know, I could see the lights flickering on and off. He was trying to fiddle with the switches. He figured it out and turned them on. All is good. He's safe. But as I'm driving behind him for the first time ever, I had the vision of a cop pulling my son over for forgetting to turn on his lights. And he's an anxious kid, kind of nervous. And this sense of him not answering the questions to a kind of hyped up, aggressive cop, not answering exactly the way he wanted them to. And then even just envisioning seeing my kid pulled out of his car by his long hair, thrown to the ground, cuffed, and then me pulling over too behind them. If that happened, what would I say to that cop? Or in my rage, or in my fear, what might I do to the cop? And then what might the cop do back to me? And then I was like, why am I thinking like this in Missoula, Montana? Been here for 20 years. Is that where we are now? Is that where the country's gone? The culture has gone. Not since the late 90s, while living near a hotbed for the Ku Klux Klan in Dexter, Michigan, have I ever felt wary passing through rural America. Never has my white ex-wife, who grew up here in LA, and my half-white kids expressed any concern about me traveling and expressed any fears about me encountering ICE agents and a potential for violence on my way down. This is my home, but I might be asked to prove it, and I might be in danger if an ICE agent doesn't believe my driver's license, my passport, my Social Security number, my American-born accent, or my college degree speech. Two in our community have already been taken. I, too, can be taken without question or recourse, simply because a masked ICE agent decides he doesn't like my face. So as a writer, I think a lot about words and how I talk and how I've learned how to talk and carry myself in order to have access to white upper middle class life. I grew up in a suburb of Detroit. My half-white son actually jokes with me a lot, the same one that forgot his lights, and says, "Dad, you are the brownest man I know." And then you open your mouth and talk, and you become the whitest man I know. And we love it. We go back and forth. We joke and we laugh because we both know that he and his green-eyed sibling exist, and our little biracial, queer, non-binary family exists because I have had to learn to talk like this, walk like this, act like this, and think and feel like this in order to make my way in a white world, and even woo his mother, and marry her, and bring him and his siblings into being, and then build a career, and do all that social climbing to survive and barely pay the bills. It couldn't have happened otherwise. So I wrote a prose poem about this, and it's called Camouflage. It's a little bit about fly fishing, ranching, and rural Montana life, but it's more so about things that I have done and still do to feel safe and accepted in a space where I am an anomaly. Camouflage. When I meet strangers deep in rural white settings, perfect and polite English rolls easily from my face, and I watch their eyes and brains appraise me. Where is he from? Is he Indian? A tourist? A Mexican? Their eyes are like fish in the murk, considering the fake fly tied and cast through the ripple before them. What is he? Can we trust him? And so, I've learned how to listen and ask questions about branding parties, about sleepless nights spent calving, about haying season and the endless hours spent moving irrigation pipes in the fields. I have never done any of these tasks. But it's not just how I speak, but what I say through my body. I've learned when to dip my brow and chin in a friendly nod, when to mirror their postures and lean back in ease, when to wave subtly with just a slight lift of the fingers off the top of the steering wheel when passing each other on a dirt road. All this so that I become nothing special, nothing odd in this landscape, not a threat, but someone who belongs here. Because I, too, am on a frontier. I, too, may be the first of my kind of face to move among them. The locals have grown used to me and regard me as one of their own. Most of the time, even I believe it. Even I forget that I am camouflage, a constructed fly cast ever so carefully into the currents of this place. So here I am, a part of the landscape, and you cannot cast me out. I had a few other pieces, but we're going to keep it shorter. So, all this talk of home. What if your home feels decimated right now? What if suddenly your home and country no longer feels safe for you, your gay son, your non-binary grandchild, your immigrant spouse with an accent? How does one feel any sense of belonging in a city and a country that has turned hostile to your sense of decency, fairness, mercy, and justice? How can any of us feel at home when we're feeling the dark side of our racist and sexist history rear up again and boldly proclaim hegemony? I wish I had an answer, but I don't. But I do have a small anecdote from my Zen master 25 years ago while she was training me. I'd been learning meditation, learning the basics of Buddhist history and sutra studies, learning how to chant, learning meditation classes and leading them and Sunday services, all of this for months and months under her quiet watch. None of this was easy for 24-year-old me. There's a verse from the Dhammapada, it's the Buddha's short sayings, that captures exactly how my mind felt back then. Just as a fish is pulled from its watery home and thrown onto dry land, so too is the mind when it is not controlled, agitated, and restless. Like a dying fish thrashing around, that is how I felt during my first months at the temple. My insides felt constantly unsettled and turbulent. And after meeting with my teacher, Haju, she said to me, "You know, Alex, our work here is really just to learn how to feel at home in our own skin. I'm working on that, and so are you. So how do we do that? How do we feel at home in our own skin, especially when it feels like the world around us is on fire? We sit. We sit quiet. We sit stable and solid in ourselves. We sit like a mountain, stone by stone by stone, stacked and unperturbable. Winds can come, snows, rains, all sorts of seasons come and go. And here we are, sitting like a mountain, stable in our own skins. You want to try it? Okay. So I invite all of you just to sit however comfortable you wish. Just imagine an invisible string at the back of your neck, pulling your spine up to the ceiling, relaxing your shoulders, closing your eyes, and just feeling stable, grounded. Each bones of our spine stacked one on top of the other. And here we are, like a range of mighty mountains, sitting together, unperturbed, calm, steady in ourselves, even as rains and winds blow, even as snows come, and heat. Here you are. Here we are. Stable and mighty. Together. Sit with that for a bit. Sit in your own skin. Time, as you feel ready, and go ahead and roll your shoulders, roll your neck, so you want to come back slow. When you feel ready, open your eyes, and if you wish, bring your palms together, rub them and get a little bit of heat. Just place them on your eyes, just to feel that, in your cheeks. So this week, I wish all of you a home, deep inside yourselves, and a home thoroughly grounded inside of your skins.